The following program is a paid production of Mike Novak, LLC. The opinions, rants, confessions, and lame jokes presented are not necessarily the views of WCPT or its parent corporation, NewsWeb Radio.
Do you delineate in your mind? Star Wars, they're so different. I mean, they are just so different. One felt like it was sort of an allegory of modern society set in a futuristic, you know, space environment, whereas the other was an allegory of modern society set in a space thing in the past. So it is, they are different. They're fundamentally different. I mean, space, right? Stars. But it's like saying you're doing another movie with bipeds and they live in structures and they wear material. It's like
that is true.
You know, I always felt like Star Wars had a Western sensibility.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, I agree. It's sort of a samurai movie, Western. You know, whereas Star Trek was. When I was a kid, I never liked Star Trek. When I was a kid, growing up, I always thought it was honestly I couldn't get into it. My friends loved it. And I would, like, try, and I'd watch episodes, but it always felt too philosophical for me. And we tried to, like, some of the writers love Star Trek. I was not really a fan. My producing partner never saw it.
Right.
So when we were all happy, it felt like that was the way to go. And this movie that we did, the goal was to make a movie for moviegoers, not just for Star Trek fans.
Right.
So if you've never seen Star Trek before, you can see this movie. If you have seen it,
I mean, the interesting thing to me was I stopped listening to you when you said you didn't like Star Trek. So I know,
fair enough.
I know what happened because I saw your mouth was moving after that. So I'm assuming you apologized.
Well, as I was saying, and I was saying that that you and your kind were much smarter than I was. I couldn't get it. It just was, you know, and so we tried to make it work for people like me and people like you.
From the Little Brick Building on North Milwaukee Avenue in Chicago, in between Andy's Deli and Lido Banquets, and just a kolachki's throw away from the Polish capital of the Western Hemisphere. It's the Mike Novak Show, the country's best deep green gardening and environment program. Heard every week and broadcast from the studios of WCPT, AM and FM, Chicago.
Good planets are hard to find. Temperate zones and tropic climes. True currents and thriving seas. Wind blowing through breathing trees. Strong ozone and safe sunshine. Well, good planets are hard to find. Good planets are in the main.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is sponsored by Locally Laid Egg Company. Because local chicks are better. Go to locallylaid.com. And by Attack of the Killer Asparagus, the funniest book about gardening you will ever read. Go to aroundtheblockpress.com. He didn't invent the word green, he just copyrighted it. Which means that every time you use the word green, you owe him a nickel. Here he is, Mike Novak.
Woohoo! You ready for this? Let's do it, Helen. Here we go.
One more time.
All right. Wait. That calls for a bell. All right. We are here at the studios of WCPT, AM and FM in Chicago, ready to rock, ready to roll, with one little tiny exception. Which is that we don't have phones. Yeah. Wait. If we're not going to have phones, we need the phone alert. No phones. So we're counting down social media today for you to be part of the show. Actually, we are going to use a phone at one point because Denny has been jumping through hoops of fire. Oh, we love you, Denny. Wait a second. Get up there, dude.
Does this work? Okay, great.
Yeah, you're there. Are you going to hang out in the Ebola-proof studio there?
Oh, my God. Don't even say that word. I'm scared. The very mention of it. No. I think this may work. Like I said, no phones, but you got to, like, stop and go, okay, it's 2014. I think we may be able to work around this. This big giant board. So what
Denny did is we're going to use the phone to talk to Rick DeMille because honestly, folks, it's the only thing that makes my show worthwhile.
Not just any phone, a smartphone.
And he, Dennis, this morning drove his car to Rick DeMille's house with a big, the longest roll of string I've ever seen in my life.
Oh, yeah.
And we emptied a big old can, you know, of the tomatoes.
Oh, yeah.
On one end, and I believe it's asparagus tips on the other end, the empty can. And we strung that between this place and Rick DeMille's, and so we'll have Rick DeMille weather.
I think it's going to work.
I think it is going to work, too. It's kind of a cool setup you've got here.
We're going to find out.
Assuming my phone doesn't run out of power, but I don't think that's going to be the case.
Bless your heart, though. I think this is going to work. Let's... You know,
bless my heart, bless your heart.
We're trying,
because for those of you who listened yesterday, it was a different experience to have a talk radio station without telephones.
Radio challenge. We're going to find out how much. How good are you for real?
The radio challenge. We're bowling for Ebola,
and it's a bummer too, because it's like the election. You know, what a perfect time to to get the callers on.
You know, I believe that the conservatives have snipped the phone lines. I do believe that's what happened here.
Sabotage. So it begins.
Or as you know, Bugs Bunny used to say, "It's sabotage-y." All right. We'll see what happens. I think that's going to work. I think you've got it set up, Dennis. I think we're cool on that. And of course, Helen.
What's up?
Is sitting opposite me here, and it's just, you know, two of us in the studio until the second hour.
That's really all they need, isn't it?
Some people might want more. You never know.
Oh, wow.
Okay. So
demanding, your audience.
They want quality. They want content. Why? Huh? What's that all about?
I don't know.
In the second hour, as I mentioned, and it relates to the audio I played at the top of the show, the Star Trek versus Star Wars, which obviously you had not heard before because you were laughing and giggling
that
here.
That's great.
You must be a star.
More of a Star Trek. I'm more of a Star Trek nerd.
How did I know that? How did I know that? Because you know how I knew that? Because you're smart.
You know, that's what it is. It's my high intelligence.
It's the dim bulbs that like the Star Wars stuff.
Captain.
What?
I'm logical, Captain.
In regard to that, some of you may have seen this week a photo of a thing that is reported to be going up on the lakeshore between what used to be Soldier Field before they turned it into a spaceship and McCormick Place, which is an aircraft carrier that should not be there in the first place. And that is the Lucas Museum, and some of you may have seen the first effort to put this thing up. It's going to be called the Lucas Museum of Narrative Art. That's what they're calling it this week. They'll change the title to something else next week. It's a firm Chinese architect. Ma Yansong, who's part of a firm called MAD, really, really called MAD Architects, M-A-D, and you can tell from the design, which to me, I have my opinions about things. It looks like a giant pile of bird poop and sitting on the lakefront, which will be the Lucas Museum. So that's why I played the Star Trek versus Star Wars thing at the top. Cassandra Francis, who is the president of Friends of the Parks, is going to be here in the second hour to talk about it. Now, we're not going to talk, well, we probably will a tiny bit, about the design. But that's not the issue. That is not the issue at all. The issue is... should this museum be on the lakefront? Because according to a law that was passed in 1973, you're not supposed to do that. It's a law that it's called the Lakefront Protection Ordinance. In theory, you're not supposed to do any development east of Lakeshore Drive. And this was after McCormick Place and Lake Point Tower were put up in the 60s and 70s. And people said, okay, enough, enough, you know, the first Richie Daley.
Well, they were talking about
his way.
Putting the children's museum.
Well, and that got defeated. That got,
yeah.
And that's technically not east of Lakeshore Drive. That wasn't going to be.
Well,
but, you know, now, and some people say the same thing about Maggie Daley Park, which is going up, that it really shouldn't be there.
I mean,
that
the
we're destroying our lakefront. That,
yeah.
The idea was that the lakefront would, and this, the words were first penned in 1836, forever open, clear, and free. Well, the pressure has been on ever since then to take money and influence and put stuff on the lakefront. So
we have such a small strip of park over there.
And it gets smaller all the time,
yeah.
Doesn't it? And that's the point. I mean, right
crazy.
Now, where they want to put the, you know, the argument from certain factions is, well, we're going to fix up that space because right now it's just a parking lot for Soldier Field. Well, my idea would be that you're right. Let's rip out the parking lot for Soldier Field and put in a park. A real park. And I don't mean a building. It looks like a big pile of bird poop. I mean,
yeah. If you visit New York, they have these massive, beautiful parks, you know, and I wish we had more of that in Chicago.
Well, we've got the lakefront.
Right.
And if we only had enough sense to protect it.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. But we're getting into the conversation early. We, you know, so that's second hour. But the Friends of the Park is doing a lot of other things. They've got an initiative called the Last 4 Miles Project, which they want to take that swath of lakefront, which, you know, right now you can ride up and down the lakefront, except for 4 miles on the north and 4 miles on, or I mean, 2 miles on the north and 2 miles on the south.
Hmm.
And, you know, the north is that those horrible buildings along Sheridan Road, which I would raise in a heartbeat if I, you know, had a bulldozer. My apologies to all you people living in the bright now who are listening to the show, but I would. I mean, they would be gone
he's
so fast.
Chase you out of your homes.
You know, if you can't have a radio station and be opinionated, what is the point? What is the point? And on the south side. So Cassandra Francis will be here. We'll be talking about that. And you folks listening today, and I hope you are at AM 820 and 92.5, 92.7, 99.9 FM. You can't call in with your opinions. However, we have Facebook and we have Twitter. And I hope that you make your opinions known. And I see that, you know, people are already doing it. And it might be better. You know, it's the thing about Facebook that's really frustrating is if people write to the Mike Novak Show, which is one of my handles there, the professional page, they end up getting relegated to the back of the bus, so to speak. So, Helen, keep an eye on that, you know, those comments. And we may talk about the waste pickup. There's some folks have been having issues with that and some folks not having issues, which is kind of interesting. If you live in Chicago and you want to post about that, wish I could take your phone call, but we can't. Do that on Facebook or Twitter. And several other things going on. The JCAR decision on fracking in Illinois happened this week. I got a few comments about that. But first of all, wait a second. Do I have the news music? Yes, I do. Okay. So first of all, we need to start with...
breaking story. On the Mike Novak Show, I said when I posted yesterday that there would be a big announcement. And if you go to the homepage of the Mike Novak Show, you will find in big red letters, brand new, the Mike Novak Show Referral Network, which I am unveiling today. And the way that works is you click on it, go to the homepage, click on it, and you are going to see a bunch of companies that I am recommending and who are supporting me. Companies like right at the top, DR Services, which is right there. And some of you may know that DR is Ron Cowgill's outfit. And he doesn't talk about that a lot, and I understand why. Because, you know, he advertises on my show. The guy is the most reputable contractor I have ever worked with. And I've been burned by some, never by Ron. So when you hear DR on this show and you hear it on Mighty House, that's Ron. That's Ron Cowgill's deal. And he's the best. And the point is, and he'll tell you this himself, doesn't mean he's the cheapest. It means he's fair. They always say a fair price, and that's the truth. It's always a fair price from Ron. So DRs. But I've got other folks on there. I've got landscapers and pest control. I'm very pleased to say that A-plus pest control is on the Mike Novak referral network, and that, of course, is Rick Moskowitz, who has been on the show many, many times. In fact, I suppose I should track down the ukulele thing he did. I think, have I got that here? See, I'm always this is how prepared I am. Rick does a wonderful job at A-plus pest control, and it's he does it naturally, safely. Non-toxic stuff. Love Rick Moskowitz. And so he's part of the network. And a bunch of other places. Locally Laid Egg Company, of course, which is a new sponsor. Natural Awakenings Magazine. Milorganite. The Care of Trees is on there. Save a Tree, a new sponsor and part of the Mike Novak Referral Network. And the deal is that they support me and I'm supporting them. And it's slightly different. It's more about web advertising than it is about radio advertising, but it's all part of the same deal. And it's a very reasonable price. And if you want to be part of that, shoot me a note, mike@mikenovak.net. mike@mikenovak.net. So take a look, go to the homepage, check out the referral network if you'd like to be part of it. I would love to have you be part of it. You can just give me a phone call or shoot me a line. The other thing I got to mention before we get into business here is where I was on Wednesday, which was kind of interesting. That was on the set of the TV show Chicago Fire. They were doing a, they were shooting their Christmas episode.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And somehow, through some machinations, my caroling group, the Frozen Robins, which is real, you're going to be hearing some of their, well, why are you laughing?
I love that you have a caroling group.
Doesn't everybody?
That's adorable.
The Frozen Robins were there, and I can't tell you what happened because, you know, if I give away any of the plot stuff, they will come and murder my cat. So I can't do that.
I didn't know that Robins had a thing with cats.
No. I'm saying the people who run the show will come.
Oh, okay.
They'll just kidnap the cat. I don't think they'll murder it.
Catnap.
I can say that I think, I mean, and you never know these things. Look, I was in this business for a long time. I don't really do that stuff anymore. You know, I've done commercials, I've done TV shows, I've done films. I'll tell you the truth. We were extras, okay? But they were looking for carolers. And so I got talked into it by one of our folks in the Frozen Robins, and we did it. And we actually had fun. And I think we're in the right spot at the right time. Because a thing happens And I think you're going to see some of the Frozen Robins and possibly me. Because I think you're going to see Santa and the Frozen Robins and a Chicago cop all in the same shot.
Nice.
Yeah, it's kind of cool. So I don't even know what, you know, maybe somebody can write in because I don't know which episode that is. I know if it's the Christmas episode, it's probably the last one before the holiday. I don't know what date that airs on. I'll have to do a little research, but I bet there are some Chicago Fire junkies out there, we'll know when the Christmas episode is aired. I guess you go. They got their own website and everything. And the waitress at the restaurant where I eat said, "Well, you could go right there and you can look at all the schedule and see what the." Which one it is. You just figure out which one it is. I'm like, okay, I guess I need to know what the number of the episode is. So there you go. That was my week, you know, including the day after a really, 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 really miserable election where nobody voted. And I asked people to vote, and do you think they would vote? No. No, they wouldn't. All right, let's get this show running. I'm going to tell you what happened to me. You know, I just told you what happened at Chicago Fire. You know what happened to me at Strachan Van Til in Chicago?
Oh, what
last
happened?
Last Sunday? I got locally laid.
Ooh.
Hey. And it was great. Did you know that locally laid eggs are bigger? At least that's my very unscientific opinion after comparing them with another reputable and humane egg company. I got some locally laid, and pulled them out, and they were bigger. I like that. So here's your challenge, folks. Get locally laid eggs. Go to locallylaid.com. Send me a short message about where you picked them up, because they've got a list in Chicago. And area and environs. And if you send me a message where you picked them up, I will put it into a commercial, just like this. You can find locally laid eggs at Carnival Grocery in Chicago, D&D, Finer Foods in Evanston, and select Treasure Islands. Locally laid because local chicks are better.
Hi, I'm Peggy, and I have exciting news to share. Natural Awakenings, Chicagoland's only monthly magazine dedicated to healthy and green living, is now available throughout Cook and Lake Counties. Natural Awakenings features articles about fitness, local food and drink, healthy kids and families, even healthy pets. We also cover gardening and environment, sustainable building, energy conservation, and green living. We include local news and a calendar to help you stay connected. I can guarantee that in each month's issue, you'll discover a new health tip, a tasty recipe, a new business in your neighborhood, or something that makes your life better. Natural Awakenings is free and available throughout the city and suburbs or online at nachicagonorth.com. Call us today at 847-858-3697. That's 847-858-3697. Natural Awakenings. Feel good. Live simply. Laugh more.
Want to make a positive move in the housing market? Replace your siding and windows. You'll improve your home's look and energy efficiency, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for your remodeling and energy needs. Siding, windows, solar and wind power, and more. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
Is pain keeping you from enjoying gardening? Dr. Bonnie Flaster at River North Wellness Center has gentle and effective techniques to get you out of pain and back to doing what you love. Here are two quick tips. First, remember to stretch. Second, use a timer to make sure you take breaks. Come see her at River North Wellness Center and find more tips at rivernorthwellness.com or call 312-642-7545 to make an appointment with Dr. Flaster and get back to feeling good.
It's time to step in the green room.
Life's a garden, dig it. You make it work for you.
Let's do it. Stepping into the green room on the Mike Novak Show. And I want to this is a strange story that I heard this week, and I found out about it on Facebook because somebody posted, and it just seemed, like I said, odd. And here's the headline. Gardener died after brushing past poisonous plant in millionaire's garden. And this is the Telegraph out of Great Britain. A gardener collapsed and died after apparently handling a highly poisonous plant on the 4 million pound estate of a wealthy businessman, a coroner has heard. I like the way this is written. I mean, meaning that I don't. Nathan Greenaway fell ill after brushing against the deadly flower aconitum, also known as devil's helmet and monk's hood, which was growing in the grounds of Mill Court House, owned by retired venture capitalist Christopher Ogilvy. I'm sorry, Christopher Ogilvy Thompson and his wife, Catherine. A pre-inquest hearing was told that Mr. Greenaway, 33, died in hospital from multiple organ failure. The gardener was rushed to hospital, but despite frantic analysis of his blood, doctors were unable to work out what was wrong with him, and he died 5 days later. The coroner heard that it was only after Mr. Greenaway's father, Richard, carried out hours of tireless research in an effort to find out what happened that the link with the aconitum plant became apparent. North Hampshire coroner Andrew Bradley heard from histopathologist Azmut Mustajab, who concluded it was more likely than not that Mr. Greenaway died after coming into contact with the deadly purple flowering plant. So I saw this and I thought, well, that's a little odd. Okay. That is for some reasons, there's something about that whole thing that just, as they say in the business, didn't pass the smell test. Now, I don't know how this is going to play out. And yes, aconitum or monk's hood is a very toxic plant. But the idea that the guy died because he brushed against it seems a little weird.
Well, and I'm seeing this reported by, like, the Daily Mail, and I don't trust them, so...
Well, and this one's the Telegraph.
Yeah.
And the fact that they put in the headline, millionaire, it sounds like a lawsuit waiting to happen, doesn't it?
I don't know. What if he brushed it and then he, like, touched his mouth or something?
That's a possibility. Now, here's the deal. The guy was the gardener. Now, that doesn't mean he knew monk's hood was there. Because I was the gardener a number of years ago at a place where they were trying to, it was a very fancy place on the North Shore, where they were trying to get some landscaping done on the cheap. That's what I was doing. And they had me rip out a bunch of weeds and put in some plants.
Mm-hmm.
And I practically rolled around those weeds like a dog on the lawn.
Uh-huh.
Turns out they were covered with poison ivy.
I knew it.
Did you hear that one coming? Did you see that one coming?
Yeah, I saw that coming.
Yeah. See that one coming? And I was putting the calamine lotion on for quite some time after that. And, you know, in a way it was my own fault. I kind of wished that the owner had said, hey, you know, we got a lot of poison ivy there, but, you know, maybe that wasn't his job. But in this case, here we are, and the guy dies of we don't know what he died of. That's the other thing. We don't know what he died of yet. The massive organ failure. Now, it's quite possible it had to do with this, but it's also quite possible that he was out there doing the same, not brushing against the stuff. As a gardener, maybe he was ripping it out with his bare hands and not really paying attention. It's a possibility. So
I found this story. The Telegraph actually followed up on this. And it says, following the recent report about the death of a gardener, apparently from handling monkshood, Guy Barter, chief horticultural advisor at the Royal Horticultural Society, has this advice. Aconitum is a very poisonous plant and must be treated with respect and caution. On the other hand, it is very widely planted. I mean, in this Facebook post that I was, this chain I was part of this week after the story came out, a lot of people said, yeah, I got it in my yard. A lot of people plant it. It's a beautiful plant. It says it's very widely planted, and untoward accidents are very rare. These rare instances generally involve ingestion of material, but skin contact might deliver a damaging dose, although this is unlikely. It is far from certain that aconitum caused this tragedy, but it is hard to rule out. This sad occurrence is a reminder of good practice when handling plant material. All plants, unless known to be edible, should be assumed to be potentially harmful and care taken to limit contact. You know, that's an interesting phrase, unless known to be edible. It makes you think that they're all there trying to eat all the plants that they come in contact with. But it is true. There's a lot of plants out there that you should be careful. Foxglove is another one. Digitalis comes from foxglove. And when I handle foxglove, and I don't happen to have any in my yard right now, but when I do, I'm careful. I wear gloves, and I pay attention, you know, because and you know, things like your gloves getting soaked and wet, and then having the juices go through to your skin, stuff like that. I just pay attention, or having breaks in the gloves and that sort of thing. So they say here, it is also advisable to undertake basic hygiene measures such as hand washing after gardening. True. Clearly, it is wise to wear gloves when handling aconitum and to avoid eating, drinking, and smoking when doing so. And that's a really good point, too, that whole taking food out into the garden while you're puttering around, or a cigarette, because where are you putting it? Up to your mouth.
Right.
Repeatedly. Now, and then the other thing about cigarettes is that you can transmit tobacco mosaic virus if you're not careful as well via cigarettes. So
what is that?
It's a disease.
But who are you transferring it to?
To the plants.
You can give, wait.
Because you take the, if it happens to be part of the cigarette.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that. That's crazy.
So it's another reason to be careful and to be hygienic when you're out there. All right. And as long as we're talking about hygienic in terms of protecting your plants, when you're pruning, you do a cut, especially if you've got a chance that a plant has been diseased. Then you wipe the pruners. Some people say 10% bleach solution. I've gone to more of a vinegar thing, or isopropyl alcohol. I've heard isopropyl is the best, better than bleach. That bleach might not be as effective as some people think. At any rate, it is all very interesting stuff. About this guy who we'll find out, and maybe it was the monk's hood, and maybe he was just a little careless there. Who knows exactly what that is all about? Let's get out of here.
In the green room.
You dig?
Okay, that was you know, gardening advice for the week. Don't eat monk's hood is if you're growing it in your yard. The other thing that happened this week that was interesting is that JCAR, which is the Joint Committee on Administrative Rules for the state of Illinois, voted basically 11-1 to approve a revised version of those rules for fracking in Illinois, which means that, get ready, we're going to have fracking in Illinois. Woohoo. Yeah, exciting, isn't it? And the thing about it that's a little weird and strange is that nobody knows what rules they approved yet. Now, they're supposed to come out around the 15th. And yet, we don't know what they are, although the lobbyists, industry lobbyists, have been jumping up and down and saying, yippee, yay, this is going to be great. Is it because they know what the rules are? And if they do, how come they do? And how come environmentalists don't and news people don't? It's very interesting. And there were a couple of reports that came out about this, and a lot of people writing about it this week. And one was from Ann Alexander at the Natural Resources Defense Council. She wrote, "We would love to show you exactly what's in this official new version, which was approved in a committee process you would have missed if you blinked. But unfortunately, we can't because we, like everyone else in the state except JCAR, Illinois DNR, and some unidentified industry representatives, don't have it to give you." That's right. After a year-long legally mandated open and transparent rulemaking process in which DNR considered a record number of public comments in developing a revised draft, that draft has been hacked up in a backroom deal-making party to which the public was decidedly not invited. It's Illinois politics at its finest. Still wondering why people are so pessimistic and cynical about our government? Now, that's Ann Alexander saying that, and let me add here my own political comment, which is, hey, and you were worried about Bruce Rauner becoming governor? You ought to pay attention to the Democrats who are in office and the people here are here already, given this. But the person who really laid it on was Jeff Biggers, who, you know, was on the program several weeks ago. He wrote on the, and he talked about the coal rush in Illinois on this program. On the heels of the nation's fastest growing coal mining rush, a state legislative committee chaired by Sierra Club champion Senator Don Harmon officially unleashed fracking in Illinois today, approving the final regulatory rules in secret as legislators essentially dumped the concerns of compromising lobbyists with the Illinois Environmental Council and Sierra Club in closed-door meetings. Despite the historic and embarrassing loss for the Chicago environmental groups, downstate grassroots group, who have rallied tens of thousands of participants to protest fracking regulatory flaws, defiantly called for direct actions to resist this with our bodies, our hearts, and our minds, according to farmer Blaze Smith, and continued to hold the line against the long-time denounced fracking regulatory machinations. Quote, the rules were negotiated behind closed doors without meaningful scientific review, said Annette McMichael with Southern Illinoisans Against Fracturing Our Environment. We are not allowed to review the new rules until November 15th when they are posted on the Illinois Register. There is no doubt they will be woefully inadequate to protect Illinois residents from the known harms horizontal fracking has brought to residents across America. So it's just mind-boggling that after all this 30,000 comments that were put in there, and as is written, a fairly transparent process until we got to the secretive JCAR people meeting with God knows whom in a room to come up with a final deal, which we will find out about. Let's see, today's the 9th. So in 6 days, in a week, and who knows what happens after that? It's just sad, isn't it, that this is what it has come down to for fracking in Illinois. And as I said,
If you're worried about Bruce Rauner, you know, look to your own table first and see who's there and see whether they're serving your own interests. All right. We're going to get to Rick DeMille. We're going to try the special, the secret work. What?
The tin can system.
The tin can system. Which should, and he's supposed to have sent me something, and I don't know if he has. Oh, there he is. He has sent me something, which I hope I can take a look at. But coming up next, Rick DeMille weather, so stick around for that.
Captain's log, Stardate 42326.1. The Enterprise is under attack by an apparently hostile life form. Mr. Worf, status report.
Inexplicable, Captain. They appear to be perambulating vegetables. We are being stalked by stalks of asparagus.
That is incorrect, Mr. Worf. Killer asparagus was the subject of a very popular 21st century tome by the brilliant author Mike Novak.
Mike Novak. I'm familiar with his work,
and so am I.
Mike Novak was one of the smartest, funniest people in the horticultural world of the 21st century.
Tell me more, Mr. Data.
He has been variously compared to Mark Twain, Dave Barry, and Edgar Allan Poe.
Raven Gosplach, my favorite holiday dish.
Thank you, Mr. Wolf. Mr. Data, options?
It seems to be available online at aroundtheblockpress.com.
Aroundtheblockpress.com. What do they have to say?
It appears that Mike Novak is a slapstick every gardener.
I prefer my asparagus with a side of patach kakach.
Mr. Wolf, are you joking?
Actually, Captain, I believe he is choking.
This is Mike Novak. Enjoy local food all winter long at Winter Farmers Markets, hosted by 15 different Chicago faith congregations on select Saturdays and Sundays from November through March. Your purchase of local sustainably produced food helps support regional farmers. The markets are organized by Faith in Place, a nonprofit that inspires people of diverse faiths to care for the earth through connection, education, and advocacy. Go to faithinplace.org and click on Winter Farmers Markets for a schedule and to learn more.
Okie poke. Let's see how this goes. We are going to go to the phone, I think, here. Mr. Rick DeMille, are you with me?
Yeah, how are you, Mike?
Ah, look at that.
It works, huh?
It is working. It's the workaround. We're doing... I appreciate you letting us take the tin can and the string and attach it to your to your place.
Is this a phone call being recorded for quality assurance?
You bet it is. I don't even know what that means.
In that case, you can go on the air with it. How about?
Okay, I appreciate it. Wow, we've got a change in the weather, as they say, coming, don't we?
Yeah. And you know, it's not surprising, is it, considering what I've been kind of clamoring about. Is that a word that we use in the English dictionary now, clamoring?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, okay.
Quite legit.
Right. Yeah, quite legit. Yeah, that is, and that as well, legit and clamoring are two words that I think we've kind of squeezed into our everyday vernacular. But no, this is something that, you know, and I think what's interesting, Mike, is how meteorologists have become a little bit more confident about discussing how climatic changes result in short-term, you know, weather patterns. I don't think 2 or 3 years ago we used words like the polar vortex, and I certainly don't think even a year ago we talked about how a typhoon in the Pacific was actually going to influence our weather here in the Midwest. And not only was it talked about, you know, amongst, you know, our discussions that we go long range and blogs that we kind of hint at this can happen, but these things have actually become posted on National Weather Service websites, which obviously get grabbed by, you know, the everyday media and then get put into, you know, blogs like the Capital Weather Gang or the Washington Post weather section. You know, obviously the Weather Channel is going to talk about it, but when you start to see on you know, nightly news how a typhoon in the Pacific is going to impact our weather here, not only in the upper Midwest or the Pacific Northwest, you know, for day 3 and 4, but for a week ahead, I think that's kind of cool. I've never seen that happen before so early in the year and with so much, you know, confidence. It's kind of neat.
It is a change, and it does make sense, you know, because, okay, here's what I will relate it to is that, Denny, are we okay? Is there something, did you want to boost that?
Crank him up a little.
He's up all the way as far as I got him.
All right, cool.
All right. You sent me a weather map earlier this week, Rick, and I posted it on Facebook. And one of the things that it showed is something that is a pet peeve of mine, which is it showed all these the temperatures that we're going to expect this week and how they're going to plummet in the United States. And so Alaska and the lower 48 had all these different colors. And, of course, there was no weather in Canada at all. It's just blank and white and no weather in Mexico because it's blank and white. And that...
Yeah. Yeah,
I mean that whole thing is like if it's not in our country, it doesn't count.
Well, they haven't paid their monthly dues yet to the Climate Prediction Center. I think that's the reason why they're not on there.
But it's what you're saying actually relates to that. The idea that you know what it really is all interconnected. And when I watch a weather forecast and I see somebody say, "Hey, the rain is coming in," and I only see the map of Illinois or I only see the map of the United States and Canada. I don't have the whole context. I don't know if there's more behind it. And they think we're so dumb that we only want to know what's going on this very second in our local, you know, our little what's the word I'm working for? I can't even think of it. But, you know, in this little tiny place.
I know what you're saying. And I think part of the reasons why those maps that you're referring to and your listeners need to know about, those are the Climate Prediction Center maps that talk about 6 to 10 day, 8 to 14 day, 3 day outlooks. I think one of the reasons why the CPC, the Climate Prediction Center, issues them minus Canadian data and minus Mexican data is they're trying to also at the same time verify their forecast. And if they end up having something on there that doesn't verify, it makes the bulk of that message appear to be not as useful or not as accurate. So they retract or continue to say, well, we're just going to do the United States, and they take the other data away. And this way it makes it strictly a U.S. product. I think there are products out there that do kind of blend the Canadian and the U.S. data and the Mexican data as well, and I know that's available somewhere, and I can always share that with you. But I think from a U.S. standpoint, it'd be nice if they're actually able to put the other stuff in there. And getting back to your main point, which was the second one actually about, you know, let's talk more about what's going on around the area so we can kind of know more about why it's happening in our area. I think the general public is a lot smarter than they were 3, 4, 5 years ago. And we have this flood of data that we can scroll through so quickly, so you might as well go that way. And I remember, you know, working for a news director that basically said, I don't want your map to go west of Des Moines, east of Detroit, north of Green Bay, or south of St. Louis. I wanted to strictly go local. And I just need to be able to explain stuff from a regional and national standpoint so you can get to the reason why we're getting it locally. He goes, nope, people don't have attention strangers. Local.
That's very interesting.
Clearly that person ruined not only the news office from a quality standpoint, but I think he kind of took the ability for people who are really wanting to explain things, and he limited their ability, and I don't think that really helps anybody. But again, I think that's changed, so I think we're headed in the right direction in that regard.
All right. Now, all that being said, our philosophy on how we're reporting the weather, in this case, it makes sense because we had a super typhoon. It wraps up into Alaska. It's pushing weather down here. And there are going to be some consequences this week, won't there?
Yeah. And let's make sure that when we, you know, refer to the fact that there was a super typhoon in the Pacific and it pushed everything down. We don't want to be in the oversimplified because what happened is that particular pattern realignment actually enhanced, what was already happening. So we already had this Greenland block, so to say, which is this large area of upper atmospheric high pressure from Greenland, kind of pushed northward into the northern sections of Canada. We already had this vast reservoir of very cool temperatures, which never really seemed to go anywhere, from the Hudson's Bay area into central and western Canada. And all the super typhoon did is it helped enhance something. So one of the things that I think I spent a lot of time with when I talked to my students about climate change is you just can't look at two different variables and say, well, if these two variables happen, then this next variable will happen. And if these three variables happen 60% of the time, then it'll happen 100% of the time. What happens with that, particularly when you're talking about climate variability and climate change, you end up painting yourself into a corner because the other 40% of the time, it's clearly not going to happen. So in this case, true, the warmer waters of the Pacific allowed Super Typhoon Uri, which is the fifth super typhoon we've had this season, and that compares exactly with the number we had last year, though last year we still had another 2 weeks to go at Haiyan. That was a super-duper typhoon, I guess you'd call it that. It is setting us up to be in the same pattern we were last winter, although it does look like we're kind of getting to that even a little bit earlier. So oftentimes you say to yourself, okay, the pattern's setting up earlier than last year. Does that mean we're going to get similar weather through the balance of the winter? And I still think you can't go that far, but at least you can say the first half, or I should say most of November is going to be cool. Most of December could probably be cool as well. And then we'll see how it goes after that. But what we're definitely seeing is a better way of, quote, teleconnecting from what has been happening and what has happened and what could happen, but not narrowing it down. I think we've gotten sometimes too narrow in our focal point of what's going to happen based on what did happen. And I think these are great examples to learn from as well. And clearly, when you look at the weather map today, you see winter storm watches all the way from parts of Montana into North Dakota, South Dakota, Minnesota, Wisconsin, 6 to 12 inches of snow, and you're going, it's not even the middle of November. It's only the first week of November. We've barely finished out the first 8 days of the month, and we're talking about weather that's typically more so early December. And again, you look back at the tropics, you look at how the oceans have pretty much made consistent pattern of above normal temperatures. But then you look at the Atlantic, and the Atlantic has actually been very quiet from a standpoint of weather. And we've seen in the past when you have both oceans very active, you generally tend to have a very, very cold start to the pattern in your landmass area. And because the Atlantic hasn't been that, we've gotten probably not as much cold air bottled up in the landmass area that we did last year. So bottom line here, it's going to be very cold once we get into late Tuesday and into Wednesday. And once the bottom drops out, we're talking about easily maybe two and a half weeks of temperatures that are going to be only topping out in the 30s, maybe even lower 30s, and that's nearly 20 degrees below average. So anything that you still have outside on the vines or in potted plants easily is going to be brought in by Tuesday, because we're talking readings that are going to be about 15 to 20 degrees below average, both for highs and both for lows.
And we're also talking about the ground starting to freeze then, right?
Yeah, and that's a great point as well, because typically when you look at how your spring season responds to snowmelt and also rainwater, or I should say rainfall, and that water actually percolated into the soil, you always have to go back and look at your October and November rainfalls and when things actually began to freeze, because what that really does is just locks everything in. I'm a little concerned because we haven't had a lot of rain in the last month. It's been somewhat dry. We've had some very cool nights, which easily evaporates water out of the soil very, very quickly. So I think we're heading into the dormant season, lacking moisture in the top 6 to 12 inches of the soil, which I think, you know, bodes well for, you know, we're going to get a couple of nights here tonight and tomorrow night before we get into the cold weather on Tuesday. I wouldn't think it's a bad idea to go out there, and if you've just planted, you know, some of those tulips that people typically plant late October and November, go ahead and water them. I think people will look at you and go, why the heck are you watering your lawn? It's not a bad idea to water your lawn right now, because I think most of that rainwater will percolate down in the soil, it'll lock in there, and you'll basically be holding on to that moisture you know, not a huge degree, but enough that'll probably help it through the winter season.
Well, actually,
if we freeze up here, it's done for the rest of the winter.
Actually, what I would suggest is not so much for the lawn, but for your trees and shrubs. I mean, you point out something very valuable, valuable, Rick, which is that at this time of the year, people don't notice when we have a lack of water, when there isn't rainfall, the way they do in the summer. You know it when there's drought conditions in the summer or if it's been dry because things start to, you know, they look a little peaked. But here they've all collapsed anyway. And so people aren't aware that as we get to this point, especially your evergreens, remember how all the evergreens got desiccated last year and came out brown. Some of that's moisture where they can't take up the moisture. Once the ground freezes, and yet they're transpiring. So if you worry about something you planted this year and you want it to do well, you might want to consider getting out there and watering it.
Yeah, Mikey, and you make a good point, because I remember when we came out of last winter, all of the coniferous trees that were probably planted in the last year never made it through the winter. If you look back at our climate data, the last time we had a rainfall of more than even a tenth of an inch in a 24-hour period, you'd have to go back to the 14th of October.
Wow.
So you're talking nearly 26, 27 days. And since that period, it's been very dry, and obviously a lot of evaporation. So in the last 30 seconds here, cloudy today, temperatures mid-40s, but probably mid-upper 50s tomorrow as this low-pressure system moves into Wisconsin. Heavy snow, Green Bay to Minneapolis to Sioux Falls, anywhere between 6 and 12 inches. And then here in Chicago, readings bottom out in the 20s on Tuesday morning, and then probably in the teens Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, with highs probably over the next 12 to 15 days about 15 to 20 degrees below normal.
Wow. Okay. Get those pretty bulbs. Cool. Now's time to get the bulbs in the ground if you haven't done it yet the next couple of days. All right, Rick.
All right. Sure, Mike.
Have a great week. In the second hour, we talk a little bit about our lakefront and how we can preserve it. I hope you will stick around for that.
Welcome to the second hour of the Mike Novak Show, the country's best deep green gardening and environment program, heard every week and broadcast from the studios of WCPT, AM, and FM in Chicago. This hour of the Mike Novak Show is sponsored by Locally Laid Egg Company, because local chicks are better. Go to locallylaid.com. And by Attack of the Killer Asparagus, the funniest book about gardening you will ever read. Go to aroundtheblockpress.com. Here he is again, Mike Novak.
Yeah, I do. What was that?
No comment.
No comment? I don't know. I was moving. You were moving. There we go.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. I noticed that there was a tweet that came in. Tweet. Reddit Gardening. Did you put up the gardening safety tips? Whoever put it up.
I put it up, gardening safety tips from the CDC, because you were talking about.
Right. And those are kind of interesting. And just so you know, I'm happy to turn over the social media stuff to Carol and Helen and whoever's here. Norman Goldman always says, I put all the tweets up myself. Well, you know, I'm glad you got the time, dude. I don't have the time here.
You had one person who asked about the anti-fracking ballot measure.
Yeah, I can't. There wasn't one this year.
Okay.
And if there was one, it was obviously an advisory. It wasn't binding.
Yeah.
I don't remember that personally. Zan asked about that. But getting back to the what you posted there, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC, has gardening health and safety tips. Now, obviously, we're going away from that at the moment. Something for future reference. But earlier in the show, in the first hour, in case you missed it, we were talking about
the poor gardener in Great Britain who dropped dead after working in a garden, and they think that perhaps he came in contact with monk's hood, and that ain't good. The CDC writes, and it's kind of interesting, they're, you know, if you're going to go through the CDC, they're going to put you in an Ebola suit so you can go out in your garden. They say gear up to protect yourself from lawn and garden pests, harmful chemicals, sharp or motorized equipment, insects, and harmful rays of the sun. All makes sense. They suggest safety goggles, sturdy shoes, long pants to prevent injury when using power tools and equipment. And do you know any gardener who does that, actually? No. Everybody's out there in shorts and in gym shoes and flip-flops. They say you should protect your hearing when using machinery. If you have to raise your voice to talk to someone who is at arm's length away, the noise can be potentially harmful to your hearing. I have to tell you about the greatest app ever that I got from Ron Cowgill at Mighty House, and I've got it on my phone. He showed it to me, and I said, I want that. It's a sound meter. Look at that. And it shows you the dB level, decibel level of anything. Now, wait, let's be quiet for just a second. Okay, just the ambient level in this room is 42 dB.
Wow.
When you think about that. I've taken it on my back porch and it'll go up to like 75 with jets overhead and noise in the alley and whatever. It's just amazing. So that's my new coolest thing in the world. Thanks, Ron Cowgill, for the app. Back to the CDC. They say use insect repellent. Now, they say containing DEET. Disagree. And wait a second. This is the DEET alarm. You know, that's why I go to A-plus Pest Control on the Mike Novak referral network and get the stuff he uses. He likes the cedar oil, and I like the cedar oil because I don't worry about the chemicals being sucked into my skin. But they do say, CDC says, protect yourself from diseases caused by mosquitoes and ticks. Wear long sleeve shirts and pants tucked into your socks. Again, you don't see anybody do this in the garden. You also may want to wear high rubber boots since ticks are usually located. Now, in Logan Square, we don't have a lot of ticks, but other people might in other areas. And, of course, sunscreen. Following instructions and warning labels on chemicals and lawn and garden equipment. The chemical thing is the one I'm always railing about because, and you know, I'm talking to you, you folks don't read and follow label directions. You just don't. You don't. And it makes me nuts. That's why I tell you, then don't buy the chemicals because you're not going to use them properly. So I don't want them in your hands in the first place. Make sure equipment is working properly. Sharpen tools. Well, if you sharpen your tools, you could get cut. I'm kidding. And, of course, keep stuff out of kids' reach. So, anyway, that was interesting. And it goes on. I mean, you could be covered from head to toe there in your garden. But we won't go into that now because in the studio with me, I have Cassandra Francis, who is president of Friends of the Parks. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Great. Thank you for coming by and to talk about a lot of stuff that you're doing. You and I met recently at a dinner and got to chatting about this and that. And I said, okay, you gotta come to the studio. Actually, we met when you were first introduced as the new president of FOTP. Back at when was that?
Back in February.
Was it that long ago?
Oh my!
So you're coming up on your year anniversary.
Just about.
And It's quite a task you have because you're replacing an institution.
Absolutely.
In Chicago. And you're quite aware of that, aren't you?
That's right. They were very big shoes to fill with Irma Tranter, who was our executive director for over 33 years.
Yeah. So it's daunting, I'm sure. I'm sure you're up to the challenge. But on the other hand, that is just something that I'm sure you're quite aware of. But congratulations for being the new president. And, of course, you come in and we have already, amazingly, just a few months later, a very big issue and a big controversy.
Exactly.
And it's something that I alluded to at the top of the show, which is the proposed Lucas Museum of Narrative Art, which is, as I said, what they're calling it this week. And it's the rendering. The artist rendering came out this week. The first one, let's call it what it is, because I'm sure that after the somewhat tepid response and in some quarters somewhat hostile response, they're going back to the drawing board with that one. I can't imagine that they're going to stick with that.
I imagine it's part of a process for them, but it is true that the initial rendering that came out for the design for the museum did, I think, galvanize some opposition to the not only the building but the location.
Which is good for you.
It is, actually.
I mean, it's good for citizens of Chicago. Let me put it that way. It's not just Friends of the Parks. But all citizens should be concerned about this because, as I mentioned, I wrote on my website, MikeNovak.net, go to this week's show. The lakefront's been under pressure for 180 years. It's every time you turn around, there's somebody who thinks that they have enough money, enough influence, that they can build anything they want. And sometimes it happens, like with McCormick Place, with Lake Point Tower. You know, if I become king tomorrow, I'm dismantling those brick by brick and getting them out of there, which is not going to make the people in Lake Point Tower happy. And those are the rich people, and they they will come after me. But it's that kind of pressure, and it has to be fought. Even the idea of the Children's Museum, which technically wasn't going to be east of Lakeshore Drive, the ordinance pretty is that specifically in the ordinance? And there was an ordinance passed in 1973 called the Lakefront Protection Ordinance.
Correct.
Does it specifically say east of Lakeshore Drive, or does it have other caveats in there?
Yeah, so it specifically precludes development, private development, east of Lakeshore Drive. And the exact words are, ensure a harmonious relationship between the Lakeshore Parks and the community edge, but in no instance will further private development be permitted east of Lakeshore Drive. And what you were referring to relative to the Children's Museum, it was in Grant Park, which has
right.
further protection related to above ground structures. So that really was what covered
that was a slightly different set of rules there.
Correct.
But the big set of rules has been, for a long time, nothing new on the lake. And this violates that.
Correct. And I always start by saying that we are thrilled that the Lucas Museum is coming to Chicago. It's the site that we oppose, specifically the site east of Lakeshore Drive. And for that matter, anywhere in a park would be a site that we would also oppose. But in this case, we're very supportive of the facility. However, the site is what we are opposing.
And I can completely understand why. And I can also understand why somebody with a lot of loot to throw around, namely he wants to build a $400 million museum, would say, well, I want it in the most prominent space in the city, even though that's where all the prominent buildings are already. And as you mentioned, not on the lakefront, not in the parks, not in a park. There is so much area in Chicago that could be developed. I think the idea of Bronzeville, you know, some people are floating that now, would be a terrific idea. But there are other places as well. Why wouldn't Mr. Lucas want to make himself a real hero to the city of Chicago and pick a place that could really use the influx of money?
Exactly. This museum will be such a magnetic destination that it really could catalyze economic development in a neighborhood, which, again, I think would make Mr. Lucas a hero.
Yeah. And I want to remind folks, I don't know if you heard this earlier, but normally I would be taking phone calls, and I bet people would have a lot to say about this, but our phones are out. But you're welcome to send me a message at, you know, if you want to send it just to my personal Facebook page, Mike Novak, M-I-K-E-N-O-W-A-K, that's great. If you want to tweet, it's at Mike Now, N-O-W. Love to hear what your comments are about this. And what we are talking about is this proposal, and I think we need to make that clear as well, that at the moment it is only a proposal. I got to tell you, Cassandra, one of the things that's really annoying me lately is when I hear a news report on various stations that are just being lazy because they say the museum, which will be built, blah, blah, blah. First of all, we don't know that it's going to be built at all. It has to be approved by city council. Second, people like you and me now are going to fight like heck to keep it off of the lakefront. There's no done deals here, regardless of what Mayor Rahm Emanuel would have you believe, and regardless of what the Chicago Park District would have you believe. So if you and I'm talking to my listeners now, if you hear somebody say this is a done deal, they're wrong. They don't have the facts. One of the interesting there were several interesting articles written in the Chicago Reader by Deanna. Is it Isaacs or Isaacson?
Isaacs.
One of them was over a meeting that was held in the summer about this by the Park District. I don't know if you want to get involved in this, but it's out there and people are talking about it. And the idea was the Park District didn't really want you folks to ask questions about why it was being cited there, that they were glossing it over and saying, oh, no, we're going to do that. It's already there. Nothing to see here, folks. Move along, except the giant, white glob of bird poop that they're putting on the lakefront. That's got to be a little frustrating because there hasn't, I talked earlier in the show about the lack of transparency in the JCAR decision to allow fracking in Illinois. Well, there's a certain lack of transparency here, isn't there?
Absolutely. And the meeting you're referring to was a meeting that was hosted by the Chicago Park District, and it was a few weeks ago. And it was specifically to discuss the Northerly Island Framework Plan, the planning process, which is an open process. However, one of the issues that was not on the table was whether it was the Lucas Museum. It was presented as a fait accompli, and the meeting also was not structured in a way that you could really gain public input related to that. So in most of the breakout groups that they had, I was not at the meeting, but Deanna reported on this. The Lucas Museum and whether or not the placement was something that was appropriate was something that came up in these smaller breakout groups.
But then was not allowed to be mentioned, I take it, in the larger group.
That is my understanding.
And they're not having another meeting until, the spring?
The spring. And that also, I think, coincides with the what we understand, really from what we read from the press, when the next iteration of the Lucas design will be coming out as well.
Here's my problem. Okay, sometimes I wonder if this is the way it was meant to play out, which is, let's put this design out and make it really, really awful, okay? Start with a bad one. And see how cynical I am? I am just terribly cynical. And then we'll come back with something that looks really good and fits right in there and is part of the City of Big Shoulders historical continuum of our wonderful architecture. And people will go, oh, that's much better. Yeah, let's put it next to Soldier Field. I think that's a problem, especially if people really voice their displeasure with the initial drawing.
Yeah, I think if that was their plan, I think it probably backfired because since the design has been presented, not only we have some very very powerful statements from the press, both Blair Kamen from the Chicago Tribune, the architecture critic, mm-hmm. both about the design as well as the site, and also from the Chicago Tribune in an editorial yesterday that I believe is in the print edition today. My phone has not stopped ringing. My email has been on fire since the design has been released. And again, I think it's really galvanized opposition not only to the concept of the Lucas Museum, but also the site. Particularly because of the size and the iconic design at that location.
Heck, even Rahm Emanuel doesn't like the design. I mean, you don't have to. You can read the tea leaves when he speaks about it. But now, really, what he needs to do is have an open conversation about the location of the museum and what would be best for the city of Chicago. Among the things that people talk about when they talk about putting it on the museum campus is access. The museum campus, let's face it, was not designed in a way to get people there, which is unfortunate because some of our greatest museums are there. And even the whole, Soldier Field being in the midst of that is problematic because that's the argument for some people for why the Lucas Museum should be there, because they say, oh, it's just a parking lot. And we can make it better, and we're going to add all this green space. Well, it's really easy to rip out a parking lot and put in green space.
Well, that's right. I think there's two ways to look at the ugly parking lot argument, which is if it's an ugly parking lot, then maybe we should return to what the Lakefront Protection Ordinance envisioned for all of this area, which is open green space and natural areas with a lot of talk about wildlife and recreational opportunities. But the other issue really is that these parking lots are generating significant revenue. They are a location that the Bears tailgaters are very enamored of. Right next to the stadium.
Sure.
And these parking lots are also programmed for use. So they are a space that's rented out for circus tents, for other types of activities on the site, cycle races. It's the beginning and end point for a lot of the road races, which is important. The fact that it's paved, again, we're not arguing for paved spaces, but when you have the restoration that was required after Lollapalooza in Grant Park this year, which took months really to restore properly.
I hadn't heard that. Okay, I missed that.
And it was closed to the public. Now, in Lollapalooza this year, it coincided with some bad weather that created, I think, a little bit more of a compaction and flooding, effectively, and then having that many people on the site really caused some significant damage. So the reparation took a significant amount of time, and the public was not allowed access to the site during that period. So there's some good support for having some paved areas, not to mention this is where the presidential helicopter lands when he's in town, for having a paved space that actually can be used. So again, we're not arguing for the parking lot, but certainly if you put a building in that space, it will be forever precluded as open space. That mm-hmm. is one of the issues that we describe. And getting back to the green space, the additive green space of this plan.
And there's 17 acres we're talking about on that site.
It was originally envisioned as 17 acres as far as what would be engaged by the actual museum building and the plan. But the Waldron parking structure to the north was not included in the plan. So that was one of the ugly parking lots that I guess wasn't so ugly because they're leaving it in place and planning to use it as part of the museum development. But the south surface lot is really the site where the museum building will go.
Mm-hmm.
And when you look at it, they had originally indicated that of the 17 acres, the museum would take approximately 5 acres of space, and there would be a net add of 12 acres of new green space, open green space. When you look at the plan, it's actually virtually no additional net add of green space because not only does the building go outside of the original parking lot footprint, the additional space that they added in the parking lot that would be their open green space is about the same amount of size, the same amount of area as the amount of space they went outside of the parking lot. So virtually there's very little, if any, added green space in this plan.
And something just popped into my head that hadn't occurred to me as you were talking about green space. The design, the current design, which we think will be revised, doesn't allow for a green roof.
There's no way you can add green space that way. Why wouldn't you do that?
Virtually the entire structure is the roof. And my understanding from what's been described in the press is that it would be a white stone-like material, which very well could be a concrete aggregate material that would be effectively a large impenetrable roof.
Yeah. You can see the drawing at my website, MikeNovak.net. Go to this week's show. It's there. We're talking to Cassandra Francis, who is the president of Friends of the Parks. Gosh, I would like to be able to take your phone calls right now. This would be so interesting. But like I said, if you feel like you want to post something, please do.
You did get a comment. Margaret Sheehan said, the design for the Lucas Museum looks like a volcano where they will sacrifice virgin nerds.
I swallowed my tongue. I'm sorry. Where did that come in?
Margaret Sheehan, it says.
Is that
her
on,
avatar looks like a Barbie.
Is that, but is that on
Facebook?
On Facebook, yeah, on the Mike Novak show.
It.
Okay, great. Yeah. Okay. I like. But it does. It's got some of that going on. You know. There we go. And we have over the years learned so many lessons about how not to do things. Oh, yeah, I see her post there. That's very funny. Thanks, Margaret. Soldier Field, for one. We took an iconic structure and put a spaceship on it. To this day, I drive by there and I want to weep, okay? And I think a lot of people do in the city of Chicago, just want to weep. And that doesn't give me hope for anything that might be constructed there. I'm thinking take the Lucas Museum, put it on top of Soldier Field. let's just add one bad design to another. I mean, what could possibly go wrong?
I think this design certainly has opened some wounds from folks who are still recovering from the Soldier Field addition. So that's one of the issues that I think has further galvanized the community and the public. But when you look at what the two buildings that actually caused the impetus for the Lakefront Protection Ordinance in 1973 were Lake Point Towers and McCormick Place East. Now, these are both, this entire museum campus here is something that I think functions very well as a campus. You already mentioned the traffic congestion and some of the access issues because it is, in fact, a peninsula, and you have mostly peak types of usage at this location. So you have the Northerly Island concert venue, the temporary concert venue, the new development of a natural area on Northerly Island, and of course all the museums. One of the things that we have suggested as an alternate, one of many alternate viable locations, would be the 31st Street Truck Marshalling Yard on a deck above the McCormick Place Truck Marshalling Operation or Michael Reese Hospital site. And the museum campus concept could be expanded to not only draw it to the south and go through the barrier of both the Stevenson Expressway ramp that comes in and really causes a barrier between South Loop and Brownsville.
Sure does.
But McCormick Place does as well. So this would be a wonderful planning implementation process where you could actually expand the museum campus to the south by a half mile. The north end of the 31st Street Marshalling Yards is only a half mile south of the Lucas site. But it is notably on the west side of Lakeshore Drive and therefore is not impacted by the preclusion for new development east of Lakeshore Drive. So it would be a wonderful site. It is still a lakefront site. And if it was built on a deck, which is one of the things, one of the deck concept has been included in the last four plans that have been in place, including Mayor Emanuel's plan that came out in 2013 for the Michael Reese Hospital site. So there would be a deck over the Marshalling Yards as well as additional pedestrian access going from Michael Reese Hospital across the Metro tracks to the Marshalling Yards and then further east across to the lake. So I think it would be a wonderful site to showcase an iconic building. We don't say much about the design because that's not our issue,
no,
but certainly
not.
It would stand out on that site in a much more significant way, I believe.
Yeah, and draw people to a different part of the city, which is close enough so that, again, you just make that area more vital.
Absolutely. That would be one of the great benefits of that site. And the Michael Reese Hospital site, which is a priority city redevelopment site, is one they've had a difficult time drawing demand to. And this would be one of those magnetic destinations that could kick off development there. In fact, Mayor Emanuel's 2013 plan, of the conclusions that were created by the development analysis team, was that the site should the city should target a large institutional use to the site. And at that time, they mentioned either the Obama Presidential Library potentially or a casino. Not both, but one or the other of those.
No, I want the casino in the presidential library. I think that would be awesome.
Could be a revenue generator.
It could be. You know, it also occurs to me, and by the way, I just got an email here from one of my listeners who says, build it underground, allowing access through the deep tunnel.
I think that's a great idea. I think that's a great idea.
But how do we address first of all, do you think there is an access problem to the museum campus? I do. Because,
there's no question.
Because if you're taking mass transportation, forget it. It's really, really tough.
Exactly.
To get there. How do we address that? I mean, if you could address that somehow, and it seems to me that if you're going to address that issue of the museum campus, it's a perfect time to use the Michael Reese facility and then have that whole area covered by some, and I don't even know what it is. Is it light rail? Is it something else? And maybe light rail is the answer, or buses of some kind. I mean, it's all a lot of money, but we're talking lots of money anyway.
Exactly. Well, the mayor has put together really a blue ribbon committee of some very talented planners in Chicago to specifically address these transportation issues. And these are traffic congestion issues currently. So adding the Lucas Museum to the mix really just compounds a problem.
And that's actually going to be where we lose money. I mean, the idea is that George Lucas is going to, you know, put up a bunch of this $400 million. Hey, it's all goes to the city. Yeah. But when then you start to redesign the traffic flow, who's taken the hit for that? And it's the taxpayers.
That is correct. That's one of the things that has been difficult to see in the press, but that is something that would fall on the public as far as the cost, because Mr. Lucas has agreed to pay for the facility, for replacing the parking that is currently there underground, which is a very expensive proposition given the shallowness of the water table, as well as the environmental contamination that has been documented on site at that location.
Yeah, that's an issue we haven't talked about. It's not quite a brownfield, but it's pretty close to it, isn't it?
Well, a brownfield is a site that has perceived contamination, and this is one that has documented absolute contamination.
Well, then it is a brownfield.
Absolutely. And the parking lots currently are functioning as an engineered barrier that is protecting the public from this contaminated soil. So a lot of the soil that's on the site there, including a lot of the berms, are actually contaminated soil that have been capped using engineered barriers, either soil or, in this case, a parking lot. Often in this location to protect the public from that contamination.
Tailgaters out there, don't go digging.
Well,
right?
That's correct. So it's a safe and probably legal condition currently, but once you disturb the site, it becomes very expensive, especially when the water table is so shallow here.
And is that accounted for in the Lucas plan? Do you have any idea? Are you privy to any of this?
Well, one of the things I think is very curious is that the original budget as presented in the press by the Lucas group is that their estimate for the building in the Presidio, which was a 93,000 square foot building, was
in San Francisco,
was a budget of between $300 and $400 million. And then there was a concept that there would be an additional endowment of approximately $300 million for the operation of the facility. However, the municipality would not get access to that money until Mr. Lucas passed away. And that's, of course, something that you'd have to worry about, because having access to that operational fund is something that would be very important. Of course, we wish a long and healthy life for Mr. Lucas. The site now, in this current site, the building has grown from the 93,000 square feet in San Francisco at the Presidio to a 400,000 square foot, seven-level building that, as we've all seen in the design, is a very expensive construction. That's on top of not only the sinking of the existing parking there, plus probably some parking that would be required for the museum itself, as well as Mr. Lucas has agreed to pay for the bridge that would connect this site of the location over to the Northerly Island location, which, again, would be a very iconic bridge. It's something that would have to be very tall to allow the continuous ability for very large boats, which Burnham Harbor is a very large boat harbor, one of the places that can accommodate the large boats. It, because it's also a navigable waterway, this bridge would need to be very high in order to accommodate that ongoing activity in the harbor.
It sounds to me like somebody trying to put their stamp on the city of Chicago.
Absolutely. Well, the budget again, at $300 to $400 million, has not increased now. So the memorandum of understanding between the Lucas folks and the Chicago Park District still indicate that the estimated cost of the structure, or that Mr. Lucas would be putting towards this process, is the $300 to $400 million. So I don't know how they account for the additional space and size that have been included into this budget, maintaining that same level.
That is interesting that the Presidio thing was roughly the same budget, and now four times the size, and it's the same budget.
Exactly. Adding four movie theaters.
Magical trick. Yikes.
So, again, this is something that I think the public should be asking that question and really understanding what the impact would be, because, you know, similar to other projects, the burden of this moving forward is something that would fall to the public and to the city. So it's something we need to be very aware of.
It seems to me that given the timing of this, and I know you probably don't want to get into this, but it's my job here, this suddenly becomes a campaign issue for the mayoral campaign. You know, if I'm Fioretti, if I'm any of the other candidates, I go keep the lakefront clear, and that becomes a campaign issue, you know. And I don't know, I'll be honest with you, I don't know how many people, I'm sure there's a lot of folks in the city of Chicago say, hey, that museum would be cool. We got to bring that here. That'd be really cool. I'm not sure exactly what it has to do with Chicago, but hey, let's bring it here. Well, my feeling is, sure, let's bring it here. Let's put it in a place where it makes sense.
And let's put it on a site that doesn't create such controversy and where it can also benefit a neighborhood. So, you know, I think this very well could impact the election period now. Certainly, if the last few days in my email account has been any indication, the opposition to this concept and just the awareness of this is an issue that people want to pay attention to has absolutely grown. So I think the timing is very interesting at this point now. The next iteration design from the press, I understand, will be in the spring, and that would be the next step, because the proposal would need to go to the Chicago Plan Commission, who is the arbiter of the Lakefront Protection Ordinance, who would then determine whether or not the use of this land for this private museum would be something that they want to support relative to the 1973 Lakefront Protection Ordinance.
But wasn't it the Plan Commission that approved the Soldier Field renovation?
That is correct.
Okay. Here we are. Here we are again, folks. Wow. Okay. Well, you know, and I know you want to talk about other things. So we're going to talk about other things in a second. To wrap this up, I want a discussion. I just want a discussion about this. I don't want to come here in the spring. I don't want the spring to get here and have the Emanuel administration say, hey, we got a new drawing, look at, and it's signed and delivered, and we're going to start construction. Because they want this thing done in, what was it? Is it 2018?
2018.
Yeah. So...
Well, there is a forum that I can just mention that the Better Government Association is holding on Wednesday at the Union League Club. That will be the beginning of that discussion, and we plan to have many additional forums that we will be working with other organizations to make available to the public to further discuss this.
I'm looking at a tweet here that Helen just retweeted. Do you want to read that one, Helen?
Which one? The one that I tweeted?
No, you retweeted. Oh, did you?
I wrote that.
Did you write
Dear
the George Lucas?
Lucas, Jar Jar Binks was bad enough. Please don't destroy our lakefront.
Oh, okay. There you go. So that's my staff. That's what my staff is saying right now. So in the studio, I have Cassandra Francis, who's president of Friends of the Parks. And as normally I would be opening the phone lines here. We don't have phones today. I hope I have them next week. Meanwhile, that's why we're going to Facebook and Twitter. And you can send me an email, mike@mikenowak.net, N-O-W-A-K. We're going to move on to other topics because there's lots of parks in the city. There's lots going on. And at some point, your head just explodes when you start thinking about this. So we'll be back with Cassandra in just a second. Now, as we head into the first truly brutal weather, just saying it is hurting me. The first truly brutal weather week of fall 2014. Here's something to keep in mind. Between January and May of this year, the Morton Arboretum Plant Clinic received more than 500 calls about winter damage on plants. Heck, I got a lot. I might have gotten 500 calls. Landscape professionals saw damage not only on evergreens, but on deciduous trees and shrubs, too. None of that is surprising, considering that in the Chicago area, it was the coldest winter on record and the third snowiest. Well, the November-December issue of Chicagoland Gardening Magazine wants you to be prepared for this winter. So it features a story on how to prepare your plants for cold, wind, sun scald, frost cracking, salt, and animal damage. And even better, it tells you how to pick plants that actually have a chance in that kind of weather. And I ain't talking boxwoods, folks. Then there's my column on the inside back page with my skewering of popular Christmas carols. Nothing can prepare you for that. Chicagoland Gardening Magazine. Pick one up at newsstands all over town. Get a subscription or give one this holiday season. Go to chicagolandgardening.com or call 888-265-3600. 888-265-3600.
Spending more time at home these days? Give yourself some room. Renovate your basement or attic. You'll increase your living space and your home's resale value, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for your remodeling needs, including additions, renovations, and other home improvements. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
Allergies acting up, trouble breathing, headaches, sinus pressure, you're tired, congested. Isn't it time to feel better? Breathe deeply and easily. Get rid of the symptoms that complicate your life. Dr. Bonnie Flaster is an acupuncturist and chiropractor who helps people get rid of allergies without using drugs, shots, or needles. Call Dr. Flaster at River North Wellness Center, 312-642-7545, or go to rivernorthwellness.com to find out how to get your body feeling better so you can enjoy life again.
Hi, I'm Peggy, and I've got great news about Natural Awakenings Chicago. We're now available throughout the city and suburbs, from Lake County to the Indiana state line. So if your sustainable business is anywhere in Lake or Cook County, we want you to be part of our magazine. Each month, more people turn to Natural Awakenings than any other magazine to help lead happier, healthier, and greener lives. If you own a green business or offer healthy living or wellness products and services, you should be working with our marketing team to get your message out to our targeted audience. Natural Awakenings is distributed in more than 1,000 Chicagoland locations, and our readers are looking for products and services just like yours. Join us, won't you? We're online at nachicagonorth.com. Call us today at 847-858-3697. That's 847-858-3697. Natural Awakenings. Feel good. Live simply. Laugh more.
You're not going to stop me from dancing here, are you? If I want to, if I want to move?
I might run away.
See, this is why you need to be in your Ebola-proof little booth over there.
Yeah. I'm feeling a little exposed. Right
you
now.
Are. You're exposed to my moves, baby.
Ooh.
It's just sad. It's just really sad. In the studio with me, I'm very pleased to have Cassandra Francis, who is president of the Friends of the Parks in Chicago. You guys are working on a lot of stuff. We're talking about the Lucas Museum, and as you pointed out, it's very important what the disposal of that is, and we hope it's disposed in a good way. But you're working on a lot of other stuff. One of the things that has been going on for quite a while is the Last 4 Miles Project. And why don't you explain what that is? Oh, my fault. Sorry. Let's turn on your mic. There you go.
Okay. The Last 4 Miles is a project that we've had underway for a number of years, and it is a wonderful project where we're trying to connect the entire lakefront, all 26 miles of it, for public access, continuous public access. The last 4 miles are 2 miles to the very north end up near the Evanston border, and then the last 2 miles at the south end near the Cal, near USX and at the right by Calumet Park. There. We are trying to get, again, continuous public access. So it has been on a little bit of a hiatus, but now we plan to invigorate that process and look at revisiting the original plan. We had actually done designs with a large group of folks and some very talented designers. And now we want to look towards implementation and look at ways that we can try to gain control of access where it's privately owned, and also look at possibly some landfill opportunities in order to make sure that this happens over the long term.
All right. You want to have access to the lake, and I totally agree. One of the things as a society that we have really done wrong, and I'm talking pretty much since the advent of the Industrial Revolution, is we took the best parts of our land and water, the interface of land and water, and we slammed industry there. We either walled it off so that only the rich people could be there, or we polluted it to death and we paved it over, which is crazy. I mean, that's the people should have access to. That's why I like the idea of the last 4 miles in Chicago. Part of it, but that's tough. At this point, thank goodness we had people with vision earlier in the last 180 years in Chicago who said, okay, we got to preserve this somehow. It didn't hurt that we had a big fire to wipe out a bunch of things, which is, it might in some ways turned out to have been a good thing. But now we've got all these high rises along Sheridan Road to the north, for instance, building out from there, that's going to cost a lot of money, isn't it? How's that going to be paid for?
Well, it would be a long-term solution. But, you know, first, Chicago really is the envy of most North American cities as far as having a mostly publicly accessible lakefront. What we're really trying to do is just make sure it's continuous. Now, we are in a partnership with the Active Transportation Alliance and specifically looking now at the Lakefront Trail, which I understand from their research is the most used trail in North America.
Really? Wow.
So it's a place where there are many conflicts. Even one of the local news stations this week talked about some of the conflicts between different modes and accidents and safety issues that are happening on the trail.
I can tell you, as a guy who has walked it, has ridden bicycles on it, you're taking your life, and you feel like it. You feel like you're taking your life in your hands. And everybody seems to think that they own it. The people with the strollers say, hey, I got a baby in here. I can go wherever I want. It's like, wow, you're going to put your baby in danger just for principle? That's crazy. And the roller skaters think they have, you know, the proprietary use of it. And the cyclists do. And the joggers say, no. We're on foot. So we've earned it. How do you reconcile all of that?
Well, that's one of the things that we are looking at, again, in a partnership with the Active Transportation Alliance. But one of the things we do think that the last 4 miles will do, if we can open up this continuous access, is take some pressure off of that very dense population that's accessing the lakefront trail in the center of the city. There's a lot of data that's been assembled on this, and the Illinois Department of Transportation's redesign of the North Lakeshore Drive is going to take a lot of this into account. account. We do need to have continuous public comment as well on this to make sure that all modes of transportation that are not vehicular have input into that plan of redesigning North Lakeshore Drive. But that, again, will be something that if we can promote this continuous access, it will take pressure off the trail, but also make it much more of a continuous infrastructure improvement for the city.
One thing that has occurred to me also is that doesn't the what happens to the lake levels affect this a lot? You know, when you proposed this, the lake levels were at historic lows, and now they're back. That has to change the equation.
It does a bit. And one of the things that we're really starting to explore now are some of the riparian legal issues arbitrate whether or not there's public or private access or private control at the water's edge. So it's something that has been tested legally throughout the country, and it's something we need to revisit. So again, this is going to be a long-term solution. We would be looking at land acquisition opportunities in certain cases where there might be an opportunity to buy land to promote this access, but there also may need to be some lake fill solutions to the process.
All right. The last 4 miles, the Lucas Museum is all really high-profile deals, but there are parks all over the city. And, you know, one of the knocks on groups like Friends of the Parks is that you don't pay attention to the poorer parts of the city. But I note that you're working on the recent land transfer from the Illinois International Port District to IDNR. I saw flyer that I got from Southern Environmental Task Force, right. Southeast Environmental Task Force about public recreation access is coming to Lake Calumet. How cool
exactly.
is that?
So that land was just transferred, and again, that's one of the types of things that we'll be working on, and that was in partnership with CDIF, the Southeast Environmental Task Force, Open Lands, as well as the IDNR. So that land was just transferred, and the next step is to find out the best and safest way for the public to access that space, which would allow access to the west edge of Lake Calumet, which this would be the first time that that was possible. But looking at some of the neighborhoods, some of our other initiatives now, we are going to be revisiting the city's city space plan, which came out in 1998, and it specifically gets at the amount of park space per resident. The city of Chicago ranks 14 out of 18 North American high-density cities as far as the amount of parkland per capita. Per person. And this is an issue that we really want to look at and see places where there may be opportunities to enhance and expand parks. And the city space plan, the city's plan from 1998, specifically tries to get at the equitable distribution of park space throughout the entire city by setting two goals. One that was for 2010, which was 2 acres per 1,000 residents by community area. As you know, the lakefront that we were just discussing, there's plenty of park access in those locations, but there are many community areas that are underserved and park poor. And those are areas that we want to focus some attention on to enhance and to expand parks.
And you're working also try to upgrade playgrounds in
Absolutely.
The city.
Absolutely. And this is in partnership. This is the Mayor Rahm Emanuel's Chicago Plays Playground Replacement Program, mm-hmm. a partnership between Friends of the Parks, the Chicago Park District, and the city. And it was to replace 300 playgrounds over 5 years, and we're underway on that. Friends of the Parks handles the community aspect of that, where we not only spread fiber or the wood chips around playgrounds once they are actually complete to try to bring the community leadership in to take ownership of the park by being part of the implementation and the building process. We have one of Monument Parks scheduled tomorrow morning, and those will continue moving forward. So we also handle the process along with the park district, trying to pick the playground equipment for different neighborhoods. So the local leadership gets to pick their own playground equipment, the type from a couple of different designs. And that's another process that we actually work closely with the community with.
You got lots going on. You got a full plate, and you're a busy person, and I appreciate you having come to the studio. If folks want to get involved, and it seems like this is
a good organization to get involved with. How do they do that?
Well, please visit our website, and you can contact us there. It's FOTP.org. We really do welcome everyone's ideas relative to the park system throughout the entire city, as well as public open spaces. So thank you very much. It's my pleasure to be on.
And good luck.
Thank you.
you're in a real knockdown, drag out fight now, and I hope you win it. I think it's important. If we can't protect our lakefront from the movers and shakers and the big money, then what's the point?
We plan to work very hard to protect the lakefront for the population of Chicago.
Okay. Thank you very much. We'll be right back.
This is Mike Novak. Enjoy local food all winter long at Winter Farmers Markets, hosted by 15 different Chicago faith congregations on select Saturdays and Sundays from November through March. Your purchase of local sustainably produced food helps support regional farmers. The markets are organized by Faith in Place, a nonprofit that inspires people of diverse faiths to care for the earth through connection, education, and advocacy. Go to faithinplace.org and click on Winter Farmers Markets for a schedule and to learn more.
Captain's log, stardate 42326.1. The Enterprise is under attack by an apparently hostile life form. Mr. Worf, status report. They appear to be perambulating vegetables. We are being stalked by stalks of asparagus.
That is incorrect, Mr. Worf.
Mr. Data, be more specific.
Asparagus officinalis, or killer asparagus, was the subject of a very popular 21st century tome by the brilliant author Mike Novak.
Mike Novak. I'm familiar with his work.
Of course. Attack of the Killer Asparagus is required reading at Starfleet Academy.
Tell me more, Mr. Data.
He has been variously compared to Mark Twain, Dave Barry, and Gwynoch of Ningledore.
Captain, shields are failing. Thank you, Mr. Worf. Mr. Data, options.
Captain, it seems to be available online at aroundtheblockpress.com.
Aroundtheblockpress.com. What do they have to say?
It appears that Mike Novak is a slapstick every gardener, taking all our self-delusions, mishaps, and confusions and playing them for big laughs.
That's not very helpful, Mr. Data.
No, it is, however, highly accurate.
All right. Start slow and then it builds.
I'm just a warming on the face of this stuff, meeting so many people who are trying to be free.
Ah, yeah, the Moody Blues. Are you familiar with them? Probably not.
Yeah, a little bit.
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah.
They were, you know. They had a kind of a cult following
in
the 70s. Classic rock. There you go. I was at their farewell tour in Ann Arbor in 1974.
Wow.
I know, and they're still doing farewell tours ever since. And I just wanted to mention a couple of things. First of all, you heard Attack of the Killer Asparagus. Guess what? We're coming up on the holidays. I cannot think of a better stocking stuffer than Attack of the Killer Asparagus. Can you?
If you have a large square stocking.
Well, that's okay. then wrap it up. You know? It's one of the funniest gardening books ever. Maybe the funniest gardening book. And I'm not.
What child doesn't dream of Santa bringing them a gardening book?
Exactly.
On Christmas
morning? A funny one. Something to entertain them. Don't you dare. I'm doing a commercial here, so you just don't even go down that road. All right. But I just thought I would mention that. Also, on the show coming up soon, I'm going to be talking about the TPP, which now that we've had our elections is coming up, the Trans-Pacific Partnership. And there are some folks doing a number of actions, and I want to call your attention. You know, it's interesting. Will it be passed in the lame duck session? Don't know. Will we have to wait until the Republicans take over the Senate? Don't know. Is President Obama still going to try to ram it through? Who knows? And this is an issue that we need to address. You might want to go to www.flushthetpp.org or www.exposethetpp.org. And soon I will be having Carson Stuckey from the Illinois Fair Trade Coalition back
on my program to talk about it. He's been doing a number of actions. He's even got a and you might want to go to Illinois Fair Trade Coalition to see what they're up to. But I wanted to make sure that I got a little information about that, that this is still on the radar. This is something that now, with the elections having turned out the way they have gone, we don't really know what's going to happen. It is even quite possible that the Republicans, who you would think were in favor of TPP and want all this trade action to happen across the globe, might not pass it simply because it's a Barack Obama initiative. Go figure. Makes your head explode, doesn't it? He will be on soon. All right. That's it. We roll it up, wrap it up. Out Chicago is next. Just be aware, you can't call in. There are no phones. I hope they know it, too. Until next week, we say go green or
go home.
Yay.